From the shadowy depths of the city, where justice and mystery intertwine, emerges a broadcast as daring and vigilant as the masked Avenger himself. You are tuned in to the Green Hornet Case Files, unveiling the legacy and cultural significance of one of the greatest crime fighters of all time. Now, let the adventure begin. Here are your hosts, Corey and Greg.
Man, I get jazzed every time that opening plays.
Isn't that fun?
It's so good.
Lauren Bacall?
Yeah.
Still don't have superhero nicknames yet, so.
Yeah, we'll get it. We should run a poll. See what the...
A contest.
I don't know about a contest. I don't.
Let's do a contest, okay. Shall we? I've got some extra belly lint here. We could...
Yuck!
Would you like a big ball of belly lint? It could be yours.
The vigilante that leaves that as his calling card is a completely different beast, brother.
Yeah, no kidding. I did have somebody over the this last week comment on the fact that they did like Fat Cato.
They did like
Fat Cato. They did like Fat Cato. And I said, I'm just not going to go there. Just not going to happen. Hey, everybody, welcome to Green Hornet Case Files, Episode 4, with Corey and Greg.
Here we are.
Here we are again.
That's right. Green Hornet 66 and Fat Cato.
GreenHornet66.com and Fat Cato. Yeah, I don't know, something like that.
For now.
Yeah.
Not for long.
So if you've got great nickname ideas, be sure and shoot them off to us, and we'll consider them.
Well, I'm trying desperately not to be that Fat Cato anymore.
I want to talk about that coming up during this episode.
Oh,
I've got
okay.
some fun things I want to talk about during this episode. The Fat Cato thing. That was superhero names this last week. An FYI for, I've had a couple of emails and texts from different people that, and I appreciate you very much. They were concerned that we were breaking copyright laws and so forth by using the Flight of the Bumblebee and some of those things.
Pretty sure that's public domain.
Well, Flight of the Bumblebee is the music itself.
But the recording we use, right?
Yes, the recording we use is by the U.S. Army Band.
Yeah.
And anything done from government standpoint is public domain. So thank you for your concern. I've checked all that stuff out. I've spent too many years dealing with the litigation issues. So, yes, we are all in the clear.
That's good to know.
Big shout out to kind of a Facebook friend of mine, John Haig, who sent us a really nice note over the 66 Batman forum.
Yeah.
He's known as A. Pennyworth.
That's a good one.
I wonder what the A stands for. John had some really nice things to say. He commented about the Green Hornet color forms that I talked about during the first episode. And John has one. John has one of the color forms. And he said he gave him an excuse to get it out and play with it.
That's awesome.
And John's words were, toys are meant to be played with.
You know what? It's as a toy collector, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
When I used to keep everything in the case, in the box, neatly displayed. And then my house got robbed. I was like, what was left were the figures I had opened.
Oh, really?
Everything else was gone. Like $10,000 worth of Star Wars figures just gone.
Just gone.
And that were lining my hallway. They were all displayed. But either which way, they disappeared. And when I got home and I realized that that's what was left, my brain was like, what are you keeping? Like, you don't plan on reselling this stuff. Like, just open it, play with it. And I have ever since.
I got a good price for those, by the way.
Yeah, did it? Well, I'm times are tight, bro. I need my cut.
Oh, Lord. Another big shout out to guys who run the 66batman.com forum. If you don't know about this yet, be sure and go to 66batman.com. And the main crux of the forum is Batman, and it's mostly 66 Batman stuff. But there is a sub forum on the side that's the Green Hornet,
which is awesome.
Which is awesome, and I personally think that the guys who run the thing should split it off by itself. But that's me.
Well, I mean, I also understand that the traffic is the people who like one typically like the other, but not necessarily. So it's a good little offshoot.
But big thanks to those guys. They've been really supportive.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so looking forward. In fact, I want to have them on the show.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic.
Speaking of on the show, we've got another special one coming up here.
Man, can we say?
Go ahead, yeah.
So Ron Fortier? Is that
Fortier?
Fortier? Oh, I knew I was going to bomb it.
It's a French name, I don't know.
But Ron was the writer for the Now Comics run.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind enough to give us some time. And what we expected to be a little bit of time turned into a lot of bit of time.
A lot of bit of.
And it was a great, great, great conversation. I had so much fun with it.
And that's coming up in the next couple of weeks here.
Yeah, look forward to getting it out to everybody.
Yeah, yeah, we'll definitely be talking about that. Topic of the week.
Yeah. So when we initially set out for this, we wanted to jump around. We wanted to discuss every aspect of the Hornet.
Mm-hmm.
And so while there has been requests for a particular version, what we want to do and what interests us is everything. So an episode about a serial, an episode about a radio show, an episode about the TV show, and then other things that fall into the purview. And this is the first one of those.
It is. And this is actually kind of the almost the impetus of the whole thing.
Yeah.
From the beginning, because we discussed in episode one what brought me to the Green Hornet. Was the fact, I don't want to really dig into it again, but I was in a bad place.
Yeah.
And the idea of doing cosplay as the Green Hornet got me really jazzed, got me motivated.
Yeah.
And I used to write a blog. It's called Wild Words. And
which I have read.
Yeah. You know, you sit somebody down in a chair and you put thumb screws on them, they'll read anything.
And my thumbs are healing up, so.
I'm happy to hear that. But the very first of these Wild Words blogs, I took on WWBD. And that is,
what would Bruce do?
What would Bruce do? The whole idea at the time was I was 64. This was in August of 22.
Mm-hmm.
First part of August or mid-August 22. And it was the idea that here's a 64-year-old guy who is not in great shape. How is it possible, or is it possible, that at twice the age that Bruce was when he died at 32, could this person get into relative shape?
Yeah.
That Bruce was when he died.
But not with Bruce's physique as the goal, but as the impetus.
Yes.
Yeah.
As the driver for the whole thing, knowing full well that there's no way.
Right.
No way that I could even come close to, but it was the driver. It was the model for me to shoot for, the poster on the wall.
Yeah. You know,
kind of thing, and I was running about 230 pounds.
Were you that big at that
time?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, 235, somewhere in there. And Bruce was, when he died, probably in the 140.
Yeah.
It's kind of all over the place if you try and look it up. So, you know, that's 90, 100 pounds that I would have to lose. And I got close.
Yeah.
By the time last fall rolled around, I had dropped, I think, about 70 pounds.
Yeah.
And was walking 5 miles a day, you know, doing push-ups. I still suck at push-ups, but, you know, those kind of things.
Right.
And trying to do some kicks and, you know, little martial artsy kind of things. But, and then, you know, winter happened. This last winter was kind of a rough one here, which kind of still feels like it's going on because it's not getting that warm.
Don't curse us, dude. It's coming. You know it is.
So, and I think I put back on about, you know, 8-10 pounds, you know, since, because I got down to about 158.
Wow. I don't think I've been 150 since eighth grade.
Send your letters to
Fat Cato.
Fat Cato at. And there is no email for that, by
no,
the way. So,
I know.
All right. So that's where I started. And then as you and I started discussing this whole thing, it was, how could a guy actually become the Green Hornet?
Yeah.
And that's what this episode, at least we're going to start that conversation.
Right.
How do you get to that point?
And we're gonna tackle this off and on throughout the series of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is just our opening salvo. So the key, that in my opinion, the first thing you need to be the Green Hornet is a genius Asian man.
Hey, we all need one, okay? We all need one. And not my Fat Cato, okay?
Oh.
If you're not in,
So anyway.
Okay. All right, get myself another one of those.
But seriously.
Yes. Yeah, Bruce, and then, you know, prior to, you start with Raymond way back in the radio days and going on up through the movie serials. They never really flesh out a lot of Cato. I mean, there's little bits and pieces that you pick up. It isn't really until you start getting into some of the written stories that you
right.
sort of get along with that.
Well, and then even the Cato-centric, the comic that Dynamite did off of the Kevin Smith run.
Which goes into a lot more detail.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does. But talking about, if money is no issue.
Right.
Okay, and I'm just going to throw that. Money is no issue. You know, I'm a publisher for a major big city newspaper.
So it's funny because that to me is another key element of the Hornet. And it's, I mean, when you talk about heroes leaning more towards the superhero genre of Batman and Iron Man being billionaires where money is no object.
Mm-hmm.
Brett is still, he's a rich man, obviously.
Yeah.
But more importantly, the crux of running the newspaper and controlling his own narrative.
Oh, yeah.
Is a massive, massive, massive thing that... It's a microcosm of William Randolph Hearst, almost. So with Hearst trying to kill Citizen Kane before it came out. If you think about that and you take that same thought process to Britt making the Hornet out to be a villain while being the hero is a key part of it. And so being able to control that narrative is a huge boon to making it actually happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Controlling that is just really so key. So I've been looking at this from all different standpoints as we were getting ready for this. And the first one I want to take on is discussing the physicality. You know, just what does it take physically to become the Green Hornet?
Yeah.
You know, and that includes the fighting aspect.
Right.
The physicality of the whole thing. But there's also things like, you know, the legal issues of, you know, it's a crime.
Yeah, yeah.
What he does, what any vigilante, Batman, any of them do.
Right. And that goes, I mean, and that goes a long way too, because there's the moral implications that come with what he's doing is for the greater good, but obviously outside of what would be prosecutable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's such a delicate rope to walk. Which, I mean, you know, I've made the joke about no rich guys are out there being vigilantes.
Yeah.
And obviously that's why, you know.
Yeah. We have coming up, I just got an email back from, he's a retired county attorney.
Yeah.
Basically what would be like a Scanlon from the show. Our district attorney kind of thing. They don't call it a district attorney here, but it's a county attorney.
Right.
And he's a county prosecutor, a former county prosecutor, and he's a fan. And he's like, yeah, that sounds like a great conversation. So we're going to bring him in at some point.
This one's going to be fun.
And talk about that. I'm also talking about the psychology. What does it take psychologically in your brain to make that decision to go out and do this?
And the duality of putting forth two different personas.
Or three, if you look at it from, you know, that perspective.
Yeah.
Good guy, bad guy, businessman.
Yeah. And you got to keep all that straight. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Where am I now? What am I? Oh,
well,
yeah.
And the stakes are really high. So you're not, I mean, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, there really is. So in my quest to get myself back after, you know, the family tragedy and after deciding to do what we did, you know, I got myself back into a relatively decent shape. I'm not a tall man. You know, I'm 5'7", something like that. So I'm nowhere near what normally is portrayed. I think Van Williams was 6'1", something like that.
And
I can never grow taller. I can wear lifts, so that's...
I know you're not a hip-hop guy, but all I can think of is I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller.
You, my hip-hop boy.
Right?
Yep, go for it. But I also thought about going from being just a guy to going out and actually, if you think about the movie that was done, it was kind of played off of in that, is the fact that Seth Rogen is not a guy that's in shape.
Right.
He goes out and he gets the crap beat out of him, which everybody loved.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But of course, then they got into the bit where he and Kato take on each other, and that was just absolutely, you know, ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous.
It is.
Ludicrous. Yeah. But the idea, but he's the first time out, he gets crap beat out of him, or could have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and so that's the thing is, when you're thinking about it, to make this decision, to become the Hornet, the amount of things that have to fall into place and the amount of time, effort, and money that you have to spend to get to be even remotely efficient at what you're trying to do is a Herculean task, you know? And so, yeah, he's got a guy who can train him. So that helps, but you also are going to have to spend a year or two before you even get going.
I've got somebody that is going to take that on for us.
Oh, yeah.
I have a good friend, and I think you know him as well. He's an author and a martial artist. His name is Jason Bond.
Oh, yeah.
Jason's a local guy here. He's the author of the Hammerhead series of action thrillers. Trilogy is comprised of what's called Hammerhead. There's Hammerhead Resurrection and Hammerhead Insurrection. He also has another standalone novel called Vengeance. I run into him. He and I just had this conversation, and he's like, I haven't seen you out of costume.
Oh.
For like the last 2 years, because he always goes to the local cons here in the Pacific Northwest to sell his books.
Right, right.
He and his wife. And so I only ever see him when I'm like in my Green Hornet outfit.
In full Hornet, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, I just haven't seen you, your face. Jason's been studying and practicing martial arts for about 30 years, ever since he was 18 years old. And he's studied Aikido, Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
Taekwondo, Shotokan Karate, some of these I'm not familiar with, even though I was a martial arts kind of guy. Kobudo, Goshin Jutsu, Judo, Muay Thai, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I think there's probably, several others that are in there. He also does an absolutely fascinating workshop for writers called Fighting in Fiction.
Ooh.
Where he, describes fights.
That's cool. Cool.
If you're interested in finding more about Jason and his books, it's jason-bond.com. So I went to Jason and I said, I want to be the Green Hornet. What's it going to take for me to get to that point? And this is where Jason starts.
It depends on what level you need to be at, because you can take somebody and teach them a couple techniques and they can use those. The simpler the technique, the better off you are. But if you want to go out and have any situation and be ready for any situation in kind of that mythical level where you're prepared and you can just kind of take people out, you're talking about a level that is that classic 10,000 hours of training.
10,000 hours.
Well, that's kind of the classic, how do you get to
master
Carnegie
anything?
Hall.
Yeah.
practice.
Yeah.
That's it.
Whether it's violin, it's a guitar, it's martial arts.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes. And then there's the issue of strength training. Do you do strength training or is it more about technique?
And then there's this whole debate about technique over strength. It's true. You need technique over strength, but you got to have good strength. You have to have good tendons. You have to have good muscles.
So...
Well, yeah, you gotta be able to back it up.
Yeah, you gotta have to have some place to start. Now, what we're not hearing here is a long conversation that Jason and I had, and he went into great amounts of detail in regards to the development and so forth of muscles and how some Muay Thai fighters can go out and they can actually kick a tree down, because of this repetitive action.
Yeah,
going and going and going. But the bottom line, like Jason says, like you said, is it does take time.
It takes a lot of time to build up the tendons, the muscle, the physiology. And we haven't even talked about technique yet. The ironic thing is the way that you build up the myelination is doing the technique over and over and over and over again. There was an NFL player that once said, "We don't do it till we get it right. We do it till we can't get it wrong." And then at the end of the Dragon, Bruce Lee famously says, at some point you don't hit with it. It hits all by itself.
Yeah.
Perfect quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he mentioned myelination in there, and I was aware of it only because I do an awful lot of nutrition and strength training, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was aware of the word, but I didn't really understand. It's very deep. Myelination, I'll read you what I have here. Myelination is a formation of the myelin sheath around a nerve to allow for improved conduction. Basically, it's muscle memory.
Oh, okay.
It boils down to.
All right.
And that's the point of saying, the fist hits by itself.
By itself, yeah.
Yeah, because I've done this so many times. That's the reason why I never, ever want to walk up to Jason and act like I'm going to grab him.
But I think at the end of this, that is the key, is Britt would have had to start all of these trainings and just do it.
Yeah.
All consuming, do it. And that's kind of that's how Bruce was single-minded for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we can go into a long history about Bruce. And this isn't just about Bruce. This is about the character of Cato and Britt.
Right.
As opposed to Van and Bruce. But Bruce is kind of the...
archetype?
Yeah.
At this point?
Yeah.
That's obviously the majority of the people that know it through him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wonderful. But... it's also when you think of Cato, it's like we even talked about it with Donnie Yen.
Yeah.
Doing, was not, is it Fist of Legends? Is that the name of the Kato movie?
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it for sure, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so, and it's, yeah. But it's that anyway, I'm getting off where my initial point. My initial point being the repetition, the practice, the training, the commitment has to be wholehearted. And that's, to me, where we go back to the psychological aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
is being able to divvy up a single-minded focus while playing the role of other people. Like, that's a lot going on.
I know we don't, I don't want to keep harping on harping is kind of a harsh word there. I don't want to necessarily keep putting Bruce up as that archetype. When you consider what he went through with, it was the fight that they had in Oakland, where he had his studio and they brought in all the masters.
The right. Yeah,
had to fight for it. And because it took him longer than he anticipated, he started doing the whole workout thing and to improve himself even beyond. That's kind of... okay, that's great, but if it's just me and I'm going to put on a mask and go out and try and bust heads tonight, I'm not there.
No,
I have to at least, you know, just save myself tonight.
Right.
And, you know, Jason talked a little bit more about, you know, learning that whole muscle memory kind of thing.
It takes a lot of time to build up all those aspects. Physiology, muscle density, tendon strength, and then the technique. So many times you can't get it wrong. And when you're operating in a place where you're not thinking, it's Miyamoto Musashi's The Void. When you're thoughtless and shapeless in your mind and things are just auto happening, that's going to be a Green Hornet level thing where a criminal will reach out, grab for the person, and they just block it aside and knock them out. It's not a conceptual, like, well, I'm going to do this and this. It just happens.
His reference to Musashi made me very, very happy. Very, very happy. Sorry. No, that's 100%. It is, you have to get to where you were confident in reaction.
Yeah.
You're not going in with we do keep coming back to Bruce, but.
Well, we do, yeah.
The whole founding of Jeet Kune Do was. The reliance on forms of this position to this position to this position is what he was trying to get away from.
Outside of, I'm just going to hit you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's what was taking it from what really was the invention of mixed martial arts, was knowing that in this moment I can switch from this to this to this, or I can draw from all these multiple things that I've trained myself in. And that is the more effective way of doing it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Literally, that's the goal.
But we really didn't see that aspect of it in, I mean, we heard it in the radio show a little bit. You know, we heard that kind of stuff, the sound effects that went along with it. When the movie serials happened in the 40s, we saw a little bit of it.
Yeah.
You know, there was a little bit of the action, you know, fighting this and a little bit.
Right.
But at the same time, it wasn't really until you got Van Williams and Bruce in 66 that it became.
What we think of it as.
What we think of it as.
Right. You know, the other aspect that we didn't even mention yet is gadgetry.
It's yes.
Just a whole nother page.
And I think we should put that one aside as a whole nother thing. Because I think gadgetry maybe is an entire episode in of itself.
100,000%. It just occurred that, but I was like, we haven't even mentioned that aspect yet.
Make a note of that. Would you write that down, please?
Miss Case?
Miss Case? Would you come in here, please? Take a note. One other aspect of this that Jason and I touched on when I was chatting with him this last week, and I hadn't really even thought about it, but I brought up the topic of him, okay, what's the difference between fighting at a competitive level Because, you know, most martial artists are working in competitions.
Right.
You know, you go to your school and you do your competitions and you advance in your belts and so forth. Compare that to going out every night in the Black Beauty or the Batmobile, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever it happens to be. My invisible jet is parked outside and... I don't know. It's a loner.
I noticed the lasso of truth sitting
yeah,
in the corner.
Yeah. She and I have been seeing each other on the side, so she loaned me the jet for this time. Don't go there. But I said, so compare those two. How do you compare those two aspects of it? And he brought up something I hadn't even thought about.
Okay.
That's a big deal, because the more that you have on the line, the more intense things are. And one of the biggest factors there is developing an internal calmness. I mean, obviously, I've never gone out and put my life on the line. And I think that's the kind of mentality they'd have to have, is say, yeah, this is the price I'm willing to pay. And if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, because if they're going to worry about it all the time, they're never going to be effective, because they're going to be in their own way constantly. They won't ever be able to hit that void state where they can just auto-react to things. They're constantly in fear. And that's not a hero's way. A hero's way is to sacrifice for other people, but also to do so willingly. So if you're second guessing yourself all the time, if you're living in fear, you're not going to be able to be a Green Hornet-esque person. You're going to have to be able to be willing to pay that price. And I think a lot of people do that every day. They go out in the armed forces and they just have to do their job.
That is a fantastic point.
Yeah, it really is. To reach that calmness that whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. It's also a level of commitment to what you're doing. You're like, well, this is it. This is the way this is. It's only two ways this can play out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Jason backed that up with a story about having a motorcycle wreck that he slid out from underneath a bike, and the bike was headed toward a cliff.
Ooh.
He says it's that typical, you know, story where he's sliding, and he said, I'm going to go over. And he says, and all of a sudden, he just had this inner calm about him that, well, you know, this is the way it ends, and I guess I'm good.
Yeah.
He didn't go over, by the way, because I talked to him the other day. So,
it's like you're spoiling Titanic.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And, you know, they both could have been on that piece of wood. They both...
That's a whole different podcast.
I'm sorry. Didn't Mythbusters? Yeah, I think Mythbusters did that. But it's a big point to be able to say that you're going to go out every night and not think about the fact that you might not come back.
So my question that I keep coming back to is, does the Hornet have to exist in a large urban environment? Like, we're what I would refer to as a suburban area.
Yeah.
You know, it's not...
We don't have any large internal downtown areas.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I can see the Hornet in Spokane. Could the Hornet happen here?
I don't think the Hornet would happen here.
Yeah. Well, there's still crime. There's still lots going on.
There's a lot going on, but there are other aspects to it. I mean, how do you, you know, it's like living in Kansas.
Right.
If you're trying to drive away, you can watch the car drive away for 10 miles, you know, because it's so flat.
It's true.
You got it? Yep. I still see it. It's right there.
Only three ways in and out of here, man. We got this.
You know, whereas in the city, you can drive around a corner and duck into an alleyway or whatever right. The case happens to be, or your secret garage.
It's just a thought that hadn't occurred to me before. I was like, I wonder if it has to be an urban environment. And I think you're right.
I think so.
Yeah.
There may be, I don't know, shall we go out tonight and try and see what happens?
I'm down.
You know, and I think this is where we need to find a good psychologist to be able to come in and have a conversation about this, about the mental attitude that it takes to, first off, make that decision.
Yep.
And then to carry it through.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, and then the psychology of, like Jason was talking about, finding the void and getting into a zen-like state of being able to react.
Yeah.
You know, just one thing after another after another.
And walk into a situation and assess the situation. And yeah. I know they did a little bit of that in the movie version with Seth.
Yeah.
And Jay Chou. And it was, okay, if this person does this, this is going to happen. And I don't know if that's something that could ever... It's a great thought. It's a great movie plot.
Oh, it looks fantastic.
It looks fantastic. Yeah. If I can figure all these angles out and how these things are going to play, then this is going to be the end result. And that's what, you know, supposedly they were showing that eventually Seth slash Britt got to.
Right. And that obviously is an exaggerated version, but being able to have an almost Holmesian read of everything that is going on is, I think, something that could be trained.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
Certain things, you know, taken for granted, obviously.
Right.
And I don't know if time, this is a conversation I want to have too, is, you know, we are dealing with a transition of time of 100 years from 1936 to, you know,
2036.
And how things have changed in that amount of time.
Oh, and it's at a rate never seen before in history.
Right. And has the psyche, the human psyche changed? You know, it has.
Right. And probably not in the way we want it to.
No.
I think it's a digressive, at least in the past decade, than progressive.
Yeah. So I think that's the place where this starts, is in addition to just a guy like me, for the example, of getting myself into shape enough so that, you know, I can walk up and down the stairs without, you know, huffing and puffing, so that, you know, if somebody were to throw a punch at me, that I could at least block it and maybe throw one back and not totally wind up on my ass on the floor.
Right.
There are all those other aspects that we want to discuss, you know, as the podcast progresses. And I think if you, as the listener, have suggestions on that, you know, email us.
podcast@greenhornet66.com. I really, really want to hear people's thoughts on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And like I said, don't forget, this is the tip of the iceberg, as this conversation is going to happen through multiple episodes, not necessarily in a row, but
yeah. Think about the fact that you're running an unlicensed car on the streets.
Yeah, that's, I
hadn't thought about that one before.
That's a good one to bring up to our attorney friend.
Who do you tell? Who do you bring into your confidence?
Yeah.
Do you bring somebody into your confidence?
Well, yes, and that's yet another topic. Of course. But Britt isn't the Hornet without Kato.
No,
there has to be. No. There has to be someone else.
And at some point in time, in the beginning, it was just the two of them.
Right.
There was no district attorney. There was no Miss Case. You know, there was no any of that. And that was a progression over time.
And I think that in of itself is the plot driver. Like, that gives you scenarios for a fictional story. To pull it off in real life, no. You got your person who is your partner, and that is it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, if something goes haywire and you get caught, that's the risk you took.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think, no, I think you have to commit to, my lips are sealed.
I think so. I think, but again, that's a conversation that we will find somebody to talk to about.
Right.
And bring that whole. And again, if you have ideas on other aspects of this that I'm not thinking of, that Corey's not thinking of, by all means, you know, just reach out to us, you know, on Facebook, on Instagram, wherever it happens to be, email us. And
we want to hear it.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Big thanks to Jason Bond for spending some time talking about this. We had a very long conversation that I just pulled some clips out of, so we may, you know, revisit some of these other aspects of it.
Well, it's funny because as we get to talking about this, the more I realize that you can't have a discussion about just this side of it because it touches every other aspect of it. It's a massive Venn diagram that has the seal at the center of it.
Yeah.
You know, so as we go on, like, it's going to branch off, but so I definitely think we'll be revisiting that conversation.
How do you keep tabs on all of the businesses that you've supposedly taken over as the criminal mastermind? You know, how do you make all of those things? We're just going deep now.
So much to it.
Yeah, it really is. Jason, thank you so much for spending some time. Go check out Jason's books. If you're into action thrillers, the Hammerhead series is a really fun read. Jason-Bond, B-O-N-D, like Bond, James Bond, Jason Bond.
This is little brother.
Yeah.
007.2.
Yeah. Jason-Bond.com. Be sure and go check him out. And
I'm sure he's sick of those jokes. I'm sorry, brother. Yeah. I appreciate you anyway, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can see him waiting outside the studios here for us to.
I'll take an ass kicking. I'm okay with it.
Well, really? Okay. Well, I'll remember that coming up here.
If I've earned it.
Yes, and coming up, as we mentioned, Ron Fortier is going to be joining us in a future episode. We have a couple of other people that we're getting lined up for the show, and a huge, huge thanks to every one of you out there that's reached out, whether it's just a quick little, hey, listened and I like it. I haven't had anybody yet that I know of come back and say, you guys are full of crap. You know?
Shut up, you morons.
Of course, now I've put it out there. And
hey, you know what? I'm looking forward to that one, too.
I can't wait to hear it. Is that going to wrap it up for this one?
I think that's it, man. Well, I think we're ready to get on out of here.
All right. It's Green Hornet Case Files, Corey and Greg. And give this some thought. I want to hear what you have to say about this.
And let's roll.
All right.
As the night envelops the city once more, our journey through the hidden alleys of history and valor comes to a close. You've been riding shotgun with the Green Hornet Case Files, where the echoes of the past meet the voices of the present. Tune in again for the next thrilling adventure, where shadows speak, secrets unfold, and the legacy of the Green Hornet continues to inspire. The Green Hornet Case Files is a Grail Productions podcast. The Green Hornet is owned exclusively by Green Hornet, Inc. Until next time, vigilant listeners, keep your wits sharp and your spirit unbreakable.